Archer was still in the saddle. The giant mountain man hadn't even let go of his 20-gallon leather hat, and Zydeco was still atop Mumu. The elf man was pallid, but otherwise looked all right.
Hey, Zydeco, how about we get out of these mists?
I think that's a great idea!
Turp!
Soon they were out of the near-opaque mists, and once again into bright sunlight. Rock rode alongside his companions neck and neck. The bird riders were dusty and worn by the time they came upon the great cliff of caves at dusk. The orange beams of low sunlight illuminated a deep darkness in one of the rock faces immediately before them.
Dobby Cave Town, up there. Come on, I'm sure they have seen us approach. Let me take the lead so the guards don't ray us down. They don't expect me to come back on top of a Guam rail bird. We techno survivors have had trouble with renegade bands of Russians once in a while. The Red Deserters roam as bandit marauders in this area, Utah.
Russians? They're here?
Oh, yeah. They're all supposed to be gone, but there are some stragglers. I would imagine they were simply so small that they weren't counted. They simply roam the countryside, but I wouldn't worry about them too much. You know, they haven't bothered us in years at all. Now let's get back inside and have some sustenance.
Well, I'm all for that. And a nice cold beer.
Their strange mounts plunged on after Zydeco, up a dusty ramp and into the darkness of a huge cavern. Inside, they saw no one for a while. Then, from 100 hiding places, pairs of tiny yellow and green eyes appeared.
Hi, hello, Zydeco!
Hello, Escadrille! Greetings and undeserved happiness to you!
And to you the same! Have either of your outlanders dissed you?
Nah, they're honorable.
Rock squinted in the sudden light. They were in a vast chamber filled with equipment, populated by several scores of men and women, much like his elfish companion. The techno survivors were dressed in tunics. The women, cute, long-haired pixies with pointy noses and red cheeks, wearing short skirts. Some of their outfits were red, some orange, some yellow or green. It probably denoted rank or job speciality. They all had small devices pointed at Rocket Archer. Bizarre plastic and metallic shapes loomed around the chamber, machines of incomprehensible scientific functions.
We should dismount.
As they dismounted, a man in a white tunic came over to Zydeco and raised a hand, palm forward.
Greetings, guest! I, noble surgeon Escadrille, grant you greetings and undeserved happiness.
You too. I'm Roxen, and my friend here is Archer.
Hi!
Hello!
Archer nursed me back to health after I had traveled the terrible lands outside. I have him to thank for my continued existence.
I see. Very well, then. You may disengage your weapons! Come, you must be famished. Let us express our gratitude with a lavish feast.
Okay.
Together with Escadrille, they went over to a long plastiwood conference table. Archer was seated at one end and Rock at the other as honored guests. They were served some green, odd-shaped but tasty fruit, some dry but peppery bread, and some vintage wine. Then came a main course, sizzling hot meat buns, probably deer meat. Once they finished the vast repast, business began. The business of accepting an unwanted, if interesting, gift.
You are free to examine device NQ27364JTY anytime you wish.
How about now?
Very well.
Zydeco and the chief surgeon walked over to the south side of the cavern, which was the point farthest from the entrance. A rectangular object lay on the rock tiles there. It was waist high and about 7 feet long by 3 feet wide. It was covered by a tarpaulin.
My invention, Zydeco. Please, reveal it.
You betcha goddamn.
The device that had prompted the long, grueling ride across the wastelands looked very much, Roxen thought, like a so-called iron lung of the bad old 20th century, a leftover of the awful polio epidemic days. In short, it was a little scary looking.
The body in question lies down in the device, and then the electromechanical servo systems slow that body's function all down. The low rate of pulse and nutrient feeding necessary to maintain a body in stasis, alive and well in perfect balance, is maintained automatically. Attachments to the brain are affected, tiny connectors to keep the brain on a normal level of alertness. But all stimuli come not from the outside, but from programmed-in experience modules. Understand?
Module, yeah, a bit.
Perhaps seeing it will make you understand.
The full-length lid of the device opened with a puff of smoke. Inside was like the inside of a coffin, nice and comfy and silken. Rock had no desire to lie in there.
No, it's best to demonstrate the device. Why don't you get inside, Rock, and take it for a spin? Have a nice dream for just a short period.
It
is perfectly safe, let me assure you. Don't diss me, stranger.
I'm sure it is safe, but how do you set it? What kind of dream will it be set on? How long will I be in there? I want to make the trip as short as possible.
Ah, good questions. As for how the device is set, these controls are microchip circuits. We improvised many circuits out of old missile guidance systems and added some new things. You can look at the blueprints later. As for your second question, you will have a very pleasant dream, as the device is set to plumb your own mind for imagery and dream personnel. It will probably be a rather, sensual dream, if you wish. Of course, we can also create dreams for you from scratch. We have a list of generic off-the-shelf dreams. You know, Playboy, Soldier in Victorious Action, all that sort of stuff. The dream will seem to take an hour, but you will only be inside the device for 5 minutes. Hardly a waste of your precious time. You're not dissing me, are you? You like the present, don't you?
I love it. Can't wait to haul it home.
Me try nice dream, too? Make me dream of women. Very long, very nice dream.
Damn, I'm sorry, Archer. We don't have a box big enough for you yet. We'll work on it. Now, how about it, Roxanne?
Archer, if anything seems wrong, get me out of there.
Okay.
All right.
Roxanne got into the device. It felt exactly like being in a coffin. He was busy trying to figure out a way out without dissing the little men when the lid started moving. Zydeco leaned over the faceplate.
We gonna set it on a 5-minute ride. Pleasure sequence.
Okay.
Small suction cups on the ends of copper wires crawled out of the sides of the device and attached to his forehead.
Bon voyage, Roxon.
Rock soon saw a different place entirely than the Techno Survivor's Cavern. He was lying in a magnificent bed inside a palatial apartment in old New York City. The bed was next to a floor-to-ceiling window. Below him, glittering with star-like lamplights, was a darkened Central Park. And suddenly, he didn't know that he was dreaming. He was aware that he had awakened from a dream, however. Something of an odd dream about a cave. But that dream faded away rapidly. He was Niles Roxon, famous playboy, and this was his apartment. And he was not alone in the silken sheets of his luxurious, heart-shaped bed. He was lying next to a beautiful woman. Her name was Kimetta, and she was the beautiful strawberry blonde daughter of a delegate to the United Nations. Roxon had wined and dined the lusty beauty the night before.
Hey, baby. You ready to go again?
Oh, I'm more than ready.
That's what I like to hear.
The machine is working perfectly. His dopamine levels are rising steadily. We will turn off the machine in just a few minutes.
Is Rock okay?
No, he will be fine. This device would be wonderful for Century City, Archer. Think of anybody in pain, anybody that is dying slowly. They can go in this machine, and they will be happy again. They can go through any number of scenarios, or what could be specially programmed for them. It could be the best therapy my god has ever had.
Invaders!
We must activate the automated defenses. Archer, stay here.
Archer raced to the table where he had left his shotgun and raised it, intending to go and help out the guards. Then he hesitated, and instead ran back to the box wherein his friend lay sleeping. Archer didn't know what to do. He was supposed to rouse Roxon if something bad happened. But how did you get the box open? He looked for a hinge or a knob and found none. Blue rays that seemed to melt walls of granite and flesh just as easily flashed overhead. The defenders were losing, falling like flies.
Wake up! Wake up!
Keep up!
Hundreds of grim-faced commandos poured from every direction, several training their guns upon Archer. He raised his hands.
Drop the gun! Somebody kill that alarm!
The Soviet's rotund, filthy uniformed commander, General Mikhail Zhabnov, stepped forward.
Drop him!
I certainly do love these lasers. I know you, don't I? Yes. You are the giant retarded free fighter, Archer. This is a grand day. And to think, it all simply started with a slave hunting expedition.
Such a great turn of fortune, surely.
Yes, I agree, Godunov. The devices in this cave certainly look interesting. I am sure all of this can be used. After all, I have a fortress to build, a world to win. These midget people will make for wonderful slaves. And you, Archer, will be a grand workhorse.
Sir, do you think other free fighters are around?
Oh, that is a very good point. Keep your lasers on stun, men. Search the place. Zimsky?
Yes, Zhabnov?
Zimsky, check that coffin, the machine, the device thing.
Yes, Zhabnov.
What's inside?
There's a body. The guy's blue and he's not breathing.
Well then, he won't bother us. Come back here and start supervising the rounding up of new slaves. Tie them all up well before they awaken. Be especially careful not to bruise the pretty little women. Tie the free fighter, too, before he recovers and kills some of you.
The puffy-lipped general strode triumphantly to a high platform. He stepped over the inert forms of several red tunic-clad techno-survivors laying on the stairs as he ascended to the top of the platform. He faced forward, jaw jutting out like Mussolini's.
This place is now the property of the new Soviet world state! Where is Roxen? Where are the other free fighters? The giant known as Archer cannot be alone here. Speak up, and you shall be rewarded.
The few citizens, still conscious, kept quiet. No one answered.
The coffin! Who is in that coffin? Now, who is inside this coffin? It is Roxen! I knew that the giant mountain man's presence indicated that his leader Roxen had to be nearby. But he's dead. Remarkable. And so sad. I had so hoped to find and torture Roxen. Oh, so sad that he is dead. But what a strange coffin. It is colder by far than the cavern itself. And all these wires. Is this man not dead? Who knows about this box? Who is the physician among these little shits?
An older man in a white lab smock seemed to shuffle a bit on his little red slippers.
Ah, yes, you. Come over here. What is this box? Zimsky, bring that man here. Set him down. You, spill.
You were dissing me. You...
Zhabnov shot out his arm and squeezed the little man's throat.
I do not care about dissing you. Count yourself lucky if it is the worst thing that happens to you this day.
It is a device that stimulates parts of the brain to make it seem as if the subject is having a lucid dream. While inside, the subject's metabolism is slowed enough to make it appear as if they are deceased.
So, the box is a dream machine? How truly remarkable.
What shall we do with the little doctor? Shall we take him out to the truck with the other slaves, or shoot him right here?
No! Don't kill him. I need him to operate this device. A dream machine can become a nightmare machine, I think, with a little rewiring.
I won't do it!
Oh, I think we can convince you otherwise. For instance, do you see the metal device to your left?
Yes, it is a soil ring.
No! It is what I will use to change your mind. Let me explain.
Reprogram the machine!
Have you changed your mind yet?
Please, don't!
I won't be using the wall for much longer. I want your brain to work, after all, but I am very experienced in getting people to change their minds. Do you understand?
Yes!
Oh, look at all those little people down there, Chimetta.
Mm-hmm.
Going about, hurrying about town, trying to go to their dull little jobs, living dull little lives. But not us. How about we start this day right with a bottle of Dom Perignon champagne?
Sounds good, Niles, baby.
Here you are, Chimetta. Ah, delicious.
Just like you.
Let's change the music, huh?
Oh, you are the best lover, darling. Absolutely the best.
So they all say.
Let's make love again.
I think that's a fabulous idea.
Darling.
Yeah.
Anything for you. How may I please you now?
Well, what you can do is... What the hell?
Gone was the wide window with a beautiful view. It was replaced by a cracked old dusty window with a crooked yellow shade pulled almost all the way down to cover it. The Louis XIV dressing table became a wobbly-legged second-hand dinette table with a faded imitation wood plastic top. The mirror above it became dirty and clouded with age. Part of its frame was broken. The ceiling above became yellowed and cracked and started to sag in one corner. Flies buzzed around the crooked single bulb hanging from the ceiling.
Hold up, I gotta go to the John.
Oh, what?
The John! You fucking deaf? Shit!
Rock closed his eyes and squeezed them tight. He must be hallucinating. But when Roxanne opened his eyes again, it was the same.
What the hell?
Roxanne reached over and delicately lifted the yellowed shade to peer outside. Gone was the spectacular view of Central Park. Instead, there was a fetid swamp. Its dead, rotted trees hung with long strands of Spanish moss-like growth.
Oh, what's that smell?
Roxanne noticed a god-awful foul smell, like he was living in a backed-up cesspool. The foul smell was coming in via the cracks of the window. It smelled of human excrement and vegetable decay.
What the hell is going on? Chimetta, where are we? What's going on? Am I dreaming?
Wow, you really tied one on last night, didn't you? Where the hell do you think we are? We're in your stinking home. That's where we are.
She picked up an old dowdy housecoat and slipped it on, buttoning the one button that was still loosely clinging to the moth-eaten cloth.
Come on, let's finish off that bottle of rot gut before breakfast. Here you go.
No, thanks. I have to be hallucinating. There's no other explanation. Where's my penthouse overlooking Central Park? Where's my great furniture? What happened to my giant cock?
Good God, you can be really funny sometimes, I swear! You snap out of it now, and you get your act together. This is your damn little shack right smack in the middle of an overheated Venusian swamp.
Venusian? You mean I'm on the planet Venus?
Man, this rotgut must have done a number on you last night. This is your life, buddy. You asked for it, you know? You're the one that wanted to come here and find your fortune and all that. And you dragged me along. But you ain't gonna live off of me no more. You're gonna work from now on, pal. No more freeloading. That's what the new dictator said. That's what the law is now. All right, I'm heading out.
Where are you going?
I'm gonna get some more Tallow Hills rotgut shitface. That is, if the bastard will still advance a bottle based upon us paying him next week.
I'm afraid I really don't understand what's going on.
Oh, brother, you really are out of it, aren't you? Now listen, Buster. It's one thing to be a failure, a bum, a no-good exploiter of women. But it's another thing to be bonkers. I won't stay with no creepy flip-out, you know? If the captain's left the bridge, I'm out of here.
Hey, now. Where do you get off talking to me like this? I'm a goddamn millionaire playboy here.
He got up, throwing aside the dirty sheets and striding over to the closet where his wardrobe of suits should have been. Only this closet looked kind of small.
You can very well leave me if you want. There are 100 women dying to be here with me.
He opened the closet and saw just one checkered sports coat and a pair of soiled chino pants on a hook.
Playboy! Oh, maybe you were something back in the old days, but now you're a bum. No one else will have you, you freeloader. So you want me to leave you, huh? Well, when you pay me back for all the sex, for all the money you borrowed, then I'll leave, and not until then. You think that you can just use me and then tell me to leave? Well, here on Venus, there's laws about stuff like that. Sexual relations are sacred, Buster. The man that has me has an obligation.
No, wait, I didn't make any promises.
Oh, so you led me on. Well, I see I did right to report you. I hope they hang people like you. You destroyed my reputation!
Roxanne's head swam. None of this was right. Something in the champagne was making him hallucinate. Surely that was it.
Oh, you... Well, Mr.
Whoa,
Cheap Screw!
Easy, you skittish bitch!
Mr. Big Shot! I certainly don't want to play bed doll with the likes of you anymore! I hate you!
She reached onto a torn and faded stuffed chair's arm and picked up some clothes, and then an oddly shimmering silver-materialed skirt.
You think women are your servants, your fucking concubines! Well, I've got news for you. You ain't shit! You ain't shit! Oh, you better put something on, Buster. You know what that kind of knock means. Get dressed. We gotta open up.
Whoa, wait. Hold your horses. Wait a damn minute.
He knew exactly who they were by their uniforms and their shiny, arrogant faces. The Interplanetary Police, Venusian Sector Squad.
What do you want? Shut up, you woman abuser! Oh. What the fuck? What is the meaning of coming here like this?
Oh, it's about time you got him! Take him away! Take the shit-faced abuser away!
Ah, the gentleman doesn't yet know the charges against him. Well, I will tell you. You have committed the crime of playboyism, and the crime of borrowing money from women. And also the crime of putting liquor on a chit and then not paying. All these things are now crimes. Effective in 2 minutes. The freeloading scum of Venus are now subject to transport for these crimes. Your criminal acts have been outlawed. Now, will you come peaceably, or should we pain stun you?
Whoa. Even if there's some new laws, they're not in use. You can't arrest me for stuff that happened before the new laws were passed.
Yes, I can. The new laws are retroactive.
What? That's bullshit.
You should have thought about that before you did what you did. Now, you will come along. You are under arrest, which means you are guilty. And now you are condemned to transport off-planet.
Transport?
Wait. Hold on. Don't you think that's a little harsh? I mean, can't you give him one more chance? Even he doesn't deserve...
Silence! You are the daughter of a man of influence, but I warn you not to interfere.
Wait, but
I said not to interfere!
Kimetta fell back against the bureau, and her blouse opened to reveal one of her large, firm, and rounded breasts. As the officer and the men with him gaped, Roxanne saw his chance.
Drop him!
Don't tase me, bro!
These are delicious meat buns.
Zhabnov had found the food that the elves served up was quite tasty. He was careful, however. He made one of them eat a few buns from the big serving dish from time to time, just to make sure the little people weren't poisoning him. As Zhabnov added calories to his already portly body, he watched his technicians working with the white-smocked surgeon escadrille upon the opened and exposed control panel of Roxanne's dream box. The surgeon had been tortured repeatedly to force his cooperation, and now that the secrets of the amazing dream machine, as well as a few of his fingernails and teeth, had been extracted from the little man, the rewiring work was going at a good clip. Roxanne's dream was being turned into a nightmare, an endless nightmare.
Have you printed out the changes yet?
Yes, Your Excellency. Some of the printout is available for your perusal.
Well then, come on, give them to me. Let me see the results of the alterations to Roxanne's dream program.
Jobnov was disappointed when he was handed the stack of paper. It was all symbols, complicated computer jargon. He didn't have the slightest idea what it meant.
Zimsky, perhaps you will summarize this for me. I don't have much patience for a lengthy reading. I don't have my reading glasses.
Yes, Excellency. Roxanne's dream has changed from pleasant to most unpleasant. You can clearly see this from the spikes on pages 3 and 17, as you have noticed, have you not?
Most definitely. Now, go on.
Yes, sir. Well, these wavy lines here show a constancy with the original character in his dream. We believe that the machine has created an ideal woman out of two women in Roxanne's real life for his enjoyment. That is, before we altered the wiring. Now that dream woman has become a betraying shrew. See these lines of disturbance on pages...
Yes. But how is he hurting?
Here. On line 1207, you see the location of the dream in space-time matrix has been moved from the time-place Roxanne believes is an idyllic matrix, the late 20th century in New York City in a penthouse, to another matrix. Now, these wavy and jagged lines combined show that the dream has been altered so that Roxanne is now dreaming deeply that he is in a fetid swamp on Venus and he has been arrested for a crime he didn't even know was an offense. We have introduced an arresting officer that is in appearance and behavior much like you, sir. Roxanne's brainwave patterns contain a very in-depth description of his interpretation of your personality. A most unfavorable one.
Oh, yes, I see. Roxanne is having a nightmare, and I am in that nightmare. One of his torturers.
Exactly. If I may say so, sir, you have an excellent grasp of science.
Go on, Zimsky.
Well, with the prisoner's assistance, we are programming in a real shocker for Roxanne now. He had been programmed to come out of the dream soon, but that has been changed. He will believe he has been transported to a prison world far into space. We did this because his brain patterns show a dislike of outer space and a positive repulsion for isolation and imprisonment.
Oh, good work, Zimsky. My compliments to the rest of your men. Make sure Roxanne never comes out of that nightmare. Can you do that?
Yes, sir. We can have the nutrients and the other metabolic systems feed him inside that box for the next 50 years. He will grow old and die in that box, having an endless nightmare, just as you ordered.
Roxanne deserves worse, much worse, for all the trouble he has caused me. But I am a compassionate man. This torture will do. Now, finish your work and let us leave this unwholesome cave and its damp atmosphere with our bounty of new slaves. Make sure that giant mountain man is kept fully sedated, for I especially don't want him to know what we did to his leader. I will try to find as awful a fate for Archer.
Yes, Your Excellency.
The surgeon's hands and his forehead were slippery with perspiration, despite the cool dampness of the cavern. Surgeon Escadrille had joined the Mad Russian General's technicians in rewiring the dream box. He had to do it. They not only tortured him, but his wife as well, and Zydeco's head was still pressed between two spike boards. Whenever the surgeon seemed to slow in his work, the bastards would tighten the compressor boards around Zydeco's head a bit more, and his friend would scream and scream. The surgeon was in a desperate spot, but he had to make the printouts look good to the Soviets. Therefore, the slight alterations Escadrille made in the reprogramming of the dream machine were minute. He hoped they would be enough to give Roxanne a slim chance to get out of the nightmare, a slim chance to escape the endless hell they were preparing for him. But Escadrille had no way of knowing. He worked under the constantly glaring eyes of the Soviet scientists. It was only possible to make the little changes he had to make in order to save Roxanne, because the Soviets didn't always know what he was doing. His knowledge of his device far exceeded their abilities to understand it. The surgeon briefly obscured his hands with his body, and then made a slight change in the wires. There. Now there would be some faults in the program. Slight anomalies. Roxanne might find that not all of his dream was a nightmare. He might find a door out.
You have been rewiring that thing for 5 hours now. Why isn't it complete yet?
Zhabnov went over to Zimsky, who, with two other Soviet technical officers and the white-smocked little man, was leaning over the circuit of the dream machine.
Well, isn't the job done yet?
We are just about to close up the panel board, Excellency. The job is almost done.
Good. It is time to leave. Get ready to move out. Make sure all the slaves are loaded on the transport truck. Take all the equipment we label to be removed. Don't forget those weird, huge birds.
His men started running around and packing up their spoils of war, and Zhabnov watched the panel being screwed back into place on the nightmare coffin. He looked into the frosty faceplate at Roxanne's blue face.
Oh, is that an expression of pain on your blue face, Roxanne? Yes, yes, I am certain it is. Your nightmare is getting a bit rough, no doubt. And it will get rougher.
Sir?
Eh? Oh, just thinking aloud, that's all. It's, well,
let us leave. But first, Zimsky, go out to my vehicle and bring me one of the American Beauty roses in the freezer compartment.
What color rose is that, sir? There are so many types of wonderful roses that you have raised, as you know, sir, and...
Idiot! You call yourself a scientist? You don't know a thing about roses, though, do you?
No, sir.
Well, they are red and large-petaled. Ah, just ask the chauffeur. He will show you. Bring that rose back at once.
Yes, sir.
I have done it. I have killed Roxanne. Or rather, I have set up a torture that will end in his wasting away in this box. I am certainly greater than Colonel Kilov. I have succeeded where that bastard has failed. It is I, not Kilov, who survived and destroyed Roxanne. Again, that is another proof that it is my destiny to rule the world. I will build up my forces, invent new weaponry with the assistance of these tiny but brilliant techno-survivors. I will soon oust Rahala from the Kremlin, personally roll the wheelchair containing my senile Uncle Premier Vasily down that magnificent flight of stairs in the Winter Palace. Let's see, where shall I have my capital? Washington? Moscow? No, someplace warm, someplace suitable for my old age. Maybe Mexico? Yes, yes! I shall be the new Montezuma! Oh, yes.
Here you are, sir.
Thank you.
Zhabnov took the long-stemmed rose from his lackey and placed it atop Roxanne's coffin, just below the faceplate.
This is for you, Roxanne. A parting gift. An American Beauty rose. Just for you.
A short time later, Zhabnov peered out of the periscope of his converted RV command vehicle. He was looking back at the cavern's wide, dark opening and anticipating a wonderful sight.
Ah, what a wonderful day.
It certainly is, Zhabnov.
You know, I don't think these little people are going to like being slaves very much. They seem to think it is a diss. But you know what? They'll get used to it. Used to obeying my orders. And the tiny women will soon find out what a big man I am. I am speaking of sex, Gudmov. I will have sex with them.
I understood that, Zhabnov.
The APCs of Zhabnov's soldiers were all slowly moving away from the final resting place of the Doomsday Warrior, leaving America's greatest hero behind forever. Zhabnov was sure they were clear of the cliff now, clear of any danger.
Detonate!
Jobnov watched as the explosion shook the cliff behind him and closed off the entrance to the cavern, sealing his old enemy in eternal darkness. The nuclear generators the little people had built would maintain power for Roxanne's metabolic assist systems. The power would keep him alive, but just barely. It would keep Roxanne in the hell of an endless nightmare. Jobnov watched the dust clear to make sure the tumble of giant stones would completely seal the tomb. It did. Roxanne opened his eyes slowly, with difficulty. It felt like they had been glued together. He saw everything through a thick and almost unyielding fog. Not until his mismatched blue eyes were wide open did Roxanne realize that he was in some sort of rocket. He had never seen this type of compartment before in his life, but he knew he was in some sort of spacecraft. He remembered being stun-gunned while escaping. He was in a cubicle that wasn't more than 10 by 20, and that was painted white. He was lying on one side of several strap-in couches. There were no accessories in sight, no tables, no windows, not even a mirror. Rock felt very light. That odd container-in-motion feeling in his gut wasn't different from what he had experienced during his flight months ago on the trip from Earth to Venus. On that trip, however, there had been a girl whose company he had been able to enjoy, and champagne, paid for by the last money of his failing stock portfolio. Rock knew that the ship he was riding in wasn't the same as the ship in which he had ridden out to swampy Venus. The passenger lines were more luxurious than this. The officer had told Rock that he was to be transported. He must have been put into a spaceship, probably destined for a dismal prison world. Transported without even the sham of a trial, for retroactive crimes. It was most peculiar that Rock actually found himself looking forward to whatever was going to happen next. He didn't resent a fresh experience, as long as he wasn't killed or maimed in the course of it. After all, Venus hadn't been any bargain. He decided to get to his feet, and found out another interesting point about his situation. He was strapped down to the couch.
What the?
It soon became apparent that the strap couldn't be tinkered with. It had a locked snap that could not be unlocked without a key. He could see dark events ahead now. His mouth felt dry as dust. It put his teeth on edge to be aware that he could have been unconscious for days. He hadn't been at all in control of himself, able to feel what was happening to him, or to know who had been doing what to his body. What had gone wrong with Cometa? Why had he suddenly been branded a criminal? It seemed as if reality itself had changed, as if this was a nightmare. He strained at the straps, looking for an exit from his white-walled prison. No sign of a door was evident. Rock did see a black slash near the ceiling on one of the four walls, but not the accompanying longer slashes from that point to the floor. Could he have been put into a cubicle without any way to get in or out? Panic started rising. Then he controlled his emotions, understanding that he'd better stay calm if he didn't want to start shouting at the top of his lungs. They, whoever they were, might not know he was awake. He almost let out a hard breath, but suddenly stopped himself and clasped his lips tight. He mustn't let them know he was awake.
Hey, you! Which of them are you?
What do you mean?
Prisoners! Which of the prisoners are you?
Prisoners? What are you talking about?
Off-world prison, you damn fool! That's where all of us are being taken.
The voice was surely from another compartment.
How many prisoners are there?
5, I think. One in each of the 5 strap chambers.
Where are we bound? What planet?
You mean you don't know about it? Oh, well... You'd better hold on to your gray pipe, if you got one. And it wouldn't hurt you to write a will, either. I'll tell you that much. We've all been picked for...
Picked? Picked for what?
Rock saw his chamber's wall open. It opened from the bottom toward the slit near the ceiling, like a garage door. The sight of the fat policeman coming into his cubicle wasn't a surprise, but he did feel a moment's shock at seeing Kimetta behind the man. He looked down at himself once more as if to make sure that the straps were still on, and then turned his eyes towards Kimetta.
Kimetta! Why did you turn on me? You! What do you mean by tying me down?
Kimetta glanced at the officer, waiting for him to speak. It occurred to Rock that she couldn't make any motion without being more attractive in his eyes. She wore a scanty, translucent, pale pink sunning suit, standard Venusian beachwear, the kind of clothes that were preferred for a spaceship's constantly warm compartments. Her baby blues were as cute as ever, her strawberry blonde hair radiant.
For once in your life, you'll be of some value to others. Oh, we'll see to that.
Kimetta, what did I do to you?
Oh, come on. You've done nothing in your life for anyone else. It's time you did, and perhaps then you will understand. You have been a playboy too long. You will work until... Well, you know. You'll be well taken care of. During this trip, I mean.
But not afterwards, I suppose.
A number of sanitary robot tools have been set down near the lower apertures in your body so that any functions you have to perform can be done. They will perform automatically.
And I'll be tied up here until the ship lands. Is that right?
It had been intended for you to be released after the preliminary inspection and to be permitted to walk around.
Roxon looked disdainfully at his plain 10x20 cubicle.
Where are we going? You can tell me that much at least.
Yes, certainly. We're on our way to Esmeralda. The famous work asteroid. Kimetta Langdon here made the choice herself.
Esmeralda? I've never...
Goodbye.
The door slid to a close, barely leaving a seam.
Hey, buddy, where's Esmeralda? And what is it?
Oh, so you really don't know about Esmeralda. You've got a royal treat coming to you.
Hey, I haven't heard of every rundown little hellhole planet in the galaxy here. I haven't been everywhere.
Well, you're never gonna forget Esmeralda, Mac. I tell you that much. It's not a planet at all. Not even a small, ugly, old planet. It's hell.
An asteroid?
You got it.
Wait. How do humans manage to live on an asteroid? Where does the air come from?
It's simple. Hey, hold on. Somebody's coming. My name's Sanders Byler. We'll try and look each other up, if we can.
Those last words chilled Rock. He was used to being on his own, to going where he wanted. He found himself more alarmed by the minute, thinking of an undersized prison planet with a silly name. Why had Kimetta picked it out? Who was she? It was Kimetta again. This time she was by herself. A small green thumb tray floated at her side, moving when she raised a finger. He wasn't sure whether the girl herself was floating on air or walking on the floor. Everything he'd heard in the last few minutes had disturbed him.
You and that slimy officer, are you lovers?
Friends only! You are my love. Or were. Believe me, he's nothing to me.
Rock was mildly surprised at having drawn a not unfriendly response, which was more than the officer would have handed him.
Doesn't he want to be your lover?
Dovine says so, but Jabno Dovine is asexual. I like him somewhat, perhaps because he adores me.
Oh, you like him, but not as a lover. You think he's too cold, too distant.
It's been decided to make your trip as easy as possible, yours and the others. Instead of having to worry and be upset about your duties on Esmeralda, you're to be put under for the balance of the day.
Under? I'd rather not be under.
Hush, and don't move.
Wait, what are you?
Kimetta surreptitiously touched the base of his neck with cold thumb and forefinger pinching the area under his chin.
Hey, what are you doing?
Raising the skin, finding a vein.
She suddenly seemed distracted, and instead of reaching for what Rock could now see was the long needled syringe on the floating tray, she touched a strange blue disc medallion she wore on a chain about her pale neck.
Here, I will put this on you. Wear it forever. Never take it off. It will protect you from the Zrano.
She took it off and clasped the medallion around Rock's neck.
My gift to you, in honor of our love.
What is a Zrano?
All will be revealed in time.
What is the medallion for?
It's a love token. As long as you wear it, nothing much can happen to you.
Kimetta leaned over him, her full lips twitching briefly in a sort of amusement.
There. Being under is better. Trust me on this.
Rock awoke in a medium-sized Earth-style room with a comfortable bed and a bureau with a half-dozen buttons to open the slots intended for shoes and one-pieces. There was a new one-piece in one of the open slots, and since he found he wasn't strapped down, he sat up on his cot.
Oh, man, I could use a shower.
He glanced to his left and noticed the bathroom.
Oh, man, that is perfect.
He took his time washing off all the sweat and grime he had picked up over the last couple of days. The new blue one-piece was the perfect size. There was a mirror, too, and a comb. Rock was able to comb his long, white-streaked black hair and look at the uncertain cast of his pale features. The sight of that mirror startled him, because he had sometimes seen movies about desperate men, desperate prisoners, taking a mirror and breaking it, and cutting their wrists with the slivers.
Can I come in?
I don't think I could stop you. There's no lock.
Certainly you can. If you want to, just ask me to come back later.
No, come in.
The door opened up and in walked a young man in a red jumpsuit with an emblem of a comet on the lapels.
Are you one of the guards?
I work here, yes.
The blonde man was a fresh-faced youth, a Venusian, whose shiny skin reminded Roxon of Corporal Dovine. He felt a moment's pang at not having seen Kimetta since she put him under, and then winked at the newcomer.
What's the score? You have a hypo for me, too?
Are you comfortable here? Everything in order?
I don't suppose it's bad for a prison ship.
You keep using that word. You make me feel rotten, if you know what I mean.
I don't see why it should. I'm being sent to Esmeralda. Isn't that true?
Well, yes.
What for? Is there a reason?
Of course. You are a criminal.
And what is my sentence? How long?
You'll find out very soon. You're bound to know before we land. I gotta go now.
Will you answer me one more question? You don't have to say yes or no. Maybe I can guess the answer by how you look when I ask, even if you don't tell me. Fair enough?
The young man turned to leave, unwilling to let Rock see his face give away any response. Rock realized he could see the man's face in the mirror.
Has my sentence got anything to do with somebody or something named Zorano?
The young guard's face showed a furtive discomfort, as if Rock had mentioned something very unpleasant.
You'll see. Heaven help you, you'll see. But don't think of tomorrow. There's a treat in store today. If you come out in the hall in an hour, you'll be on your way to a pleasant surprise.
What the fuck was that all about?
Rock looked in the desk slots for anything to pass the time. No books, no videos, no pictures, nothing. He went back and stared at his face in the bathroom mirror, then shrugged and looked away. He was used to taking pleasure from others and giving it to them, but not used to plotting. Still, he would escape. Somehow, he would escape. The outside door didn't open until an hour had drifted past, and when it did, there was no one there. He went through the door. He was alone in a long, antiseptically white corridor, facing 5 closed doors, 2 others on the same side of the corridor as his room. There wasn't any indication of where to go or what to do. Right or left? If a long white corridor could be called confusing, he was certainly confused. His hand went to the circular blue medallion. A door far down the hall to the right opened halfway. Rock headed in that direction. He half imagined a pretty girl, maybe Kimetta herself, beckoning with another syringe. A burly and unshaven man came out of a door right in front of Rock.
I never seen you in my life. You're not from Venus Prison. Who are you?
You've spoken to me, and I've listened to you. Don't you recognize my voice?
Huh? Oh, yeah! You're in the next cube! Well, lots of luck, sonny. You're no older than about 40, I'd guess. Did you have a nice life?
Oh, more or less.
Yeah. More or less. That sounds about right. Things like this, they had not happened to guys like me who never had a break. shoved from prison world to prison world. Unlucky, that's me. I, who haven't been around, haven't seen much.
What's going to happen to us?
As I said, my name's Sanders Byler. Pleased to meet you.
Rock's my name. Niles Roxon.
He took the man's ham-hock-sized hand and shook it. To his astonishment, something seemed to tickle his palm, and he realized that the handshake was a ruse. Something had been put into his hand. Roxon drew his hand back and looked down at it. A gray square. A message. Sanders Byler made an urgent gesture towards a flap of the new one-piece that Rock was wearing. He put the square away, supposing that Sanders, as a longtime prisoner, was used to living with small intrigues. Everything he did that authority wouldn't know about was a triumph, perhaps. A small but solid triumph. Rock looked down the corridor at the door that had opened. Nothing. No one had come out there.
So, Sanders, what were you arrested for?
Smuggling, if that makes any difference now. How I figured to get away with a smuggling job on Venus, I'll never know. The way it is, kid, is that you hear stories about other people who did things, and you suppose you can do them. So you smuggle slump crystals from the Gamma Quadrant, and you get caught and you get put in a cruncher. That's all there is to it. After that, it's up to them. Your life isn't your own anymore. What are you in for?
I don't know. I think for being a playboy. Didn't know it was illegal.
Oh, yeah. Retroactive laws are a bummer, aren't they?
I suppose. What's going to happen to us on Esmeralda?
You know, I'm not exactly sure. If it was some ordinary prison planet we'd been taken to, I'd say it was a so-called medical experiment with us prisoners to be used as material. On Esmeralda, I doubt it. From what I've heard, they're pretty much a no-nonsense group there. Into the work ethic, period. And lots of rules. Anything that gets done around there, kid, there's a rule. Like, how to take a crap. Or how many breaths in a second, or, how to think. You know what I mean?
I think I do. Listen, do you think it's got anything to do with somebody named Zrano? Our being brought to Esmeralda in the first place, I mean.
Sanders Byler's reaction wasn't measured like the guard's. The burly man pulled back as if Rock had developed some contagious disease. His eyes widened in horror, and he drew up one large hand as if to fend off an attack.
Oh my God, no. They can't do that to you. They can't do that to me. Not just for being a smuggler. Oh, heaven help us, kid. I'll pray for you and me, I swear.